You're listening to Hooked on Startups, where every week you'll hear from some of the most talented, inspiring, and successful entrepreneurs who share their real-life stories, how they overcame challenges and failures, and how they mastered success. Get ready for some of the best business tips, tricks and tactics, and some frank, unscripted discussions. Here's your host, Matthew Sullivan.
I just thought I'd press record and see what happens. I mean, we're living dangerously. You know, COVID. Yeah, you know. But this, you know, recording live, that's where you live dangerously.
I listened to several of your episodes.
What would you want to do something like that for? That's time you're never going to get back.
Yeah, well, to you know, prepare and get ready for the interview. And one thing I found is I think your accent, your voice makes things significantly more meaningful and profound and impactful than
let me disavow you of that misapprehension as quickly as possible. You know, it's funny, but it's a burden, you understand, because people say, you know, it just sounds so intelligent. And then very soon afterwards, they find out the reality.
Oh, yeah.
Those words that I uttered were empty and meaningless.
Yeah, see, I don't think anybody will notice. That's it took me, you know, several episodes in to kind of figure out. I was like, is he really saying?
Yes, that's
yeah, exactly. So it's
I'm not
working,
going on
that's
that.
What I'm saying. Yeah.
I'm not wasting my time, you know. But Robert Nickel, it's a pleasure to have you on Hooked on Startups. And I want you to tell me all about Rocket Station starting now. That's it. I mean, that's your cue to say.
Yeah. Well, first, Matthew, thank you for
We can cut that bit out in the edits, by the way, if you want.
Hey, no, I'm happy for you to roll with it. However, right, it is what it is. So, thanks a lot for having me on your show. Like I mentioned to you, I've watched a bunch of them, the videos. So I know how much work you put into it, and I think you have some great guests. And so, just wanted to say I appreciate you and thanks for your time and everybody that's taking the time to watch.
I'm humbled and touched, and I can feel a tear beginning to well up in my left. Just there, I'll push it back in. There you go. So it's very, very kind.
See, if you weren't on video, you'd come across as a great liar.
Yes. Don't make me laugh. It hurts. Yes.
Yeah. So Rocket Station, we just do a couple things. We document systems and processes because most companies, you know, we work with Fortune 500 companies down to single member LLCs and pretty much everybody in between. Yeah. But our core, our bread and butter for our client base is small to mid-sized business, and not very many businesses have documented systems and processes or training materials or scopes of work. So that's the first thing that we do. And then the second thing is it's dedicated hiring. So functions just like a W-2, but we take all the HR liability. It's just a service agreement for our client partners. So those are the two very non-sexy, but helpful and useful things that we do at Rocket Station.
And have you ever come across the expression that HR stands for human remains? Yeah. I mean, you are dealing with possibly the most difficult, unpredictable, uncharted, heavily regulated, you know, part of anyone, you know, nightmarish part of anyone's business.
Yeah, exactly. That's a, and you know, whether you have existing employees or you're just kind of starting to figure that out, it's overwhelming for everyone, right? And so whether you've got one or, you know, we're well over 1,000 now. And it's still one of those things that we think about all the time is protecting ourselves and protecting our clients and making sure that we've got all our ducks in a row, if I can be cliche about it.
Yes. No, cliche is fine. In fact, we live and breathe cliches here. I mean, my favorite cliches are, have you ever heard someone say, let's run that up the flagpole and see who salutes it? Or is that just a myth? I mean, You must come across, when you're hiring people, do you come across these sort of office stereotypes, people that you think, have you just been watching the entire series of The Office before you spoke to me. Do you come across those sort of people? Don't give out any names.
Well, I mean, I think I was that way, right? So I used to be the guy that, you know, felt sick driving into work every day because I knew I was going to have to tell team members what to do and manage people, basically walk into an office with other human beings in there. Then I didn't feel like they were productive or very efficient or good at what they were supposed to be doing. And I felt like my day was just managing them all day and not getting anything new done, right? So it's not just our clients, but yeah, we kind of hear the same things over and over and over again. And it doesn't matter whether you're a software company or you're a service provider or, you know, in private equity, everybody kind of has the same issues when it comes to operations and day-to-day and the just all the things that it takes to actually make a business run. That's where most of us actually struggle. We're good at our core competencies, but everything else that it takes to actually fulfill and manage and create wonderful experiences that it from all those expectations that you've set, that's the hard part for everybody.
And I think really the hardest part of any business. Now let's rewind. Okay, I'll park that thought for the moment. Tell me again, you mentioned that you deal with all sorts of businesses from, you know, Fortune 500 or Fortune, you know, size companies down to sort of smaller companies. What is the average sized company that would approach you? Is that a valid question?
Yeah. So somewhere between 10 to 100 employees is kind of the core of our client base. So that includes the team members that are with us. So on average, people hire 3 to 4 of our team members from us full time.
Yes. And is it really, I mean, do you find that you're dealing primarily with entrepreneurs or are these established businesses that are just finding it difficult to grow?
A little bit of both. So, you know, you talked about things that have changed. And one of the big things that happened recently was people were forced to kind of adjust to what has now been termed the new normal. Everybody's tired of hearing that. But, you know, most people are still working from home and most people are still working in virtual environments. So before the pandemic, it was something that people knew about, but they thought it was just, you know, Bank of America or Best Buy or, you know, massive companies who when you think of outsourcing or virtual staffing, that's what you think of, this terrible experience that you've had with some giant company, right? Well, the last 18 to 24 months, people have really figured out that you can have virtual remote teams that can be every bit as productive, if not more so, working remotely, and it doesn't matter whether that's in the same city or the same state or across the globe. But, you know, we were really proud of our clients, and you're talking about size. Well, we had almost no reduction in our client base the last 18 months. And we like to think a big part of that success comes down to there's no disruptions in the day-to-day for their business. Now, people's personal lives and, you know, having kids, not being in school and, you know, maybe not having home offices set up right away. Those types of things were very disruptive. But, you know, for the vast majority of our clients, they were already remote, already virtual, very, you know, slimmed down employee and W-2 workforce. And then most of their day-to-day tasks and are to remote teams outsourced to through companies like ours. So that has been kind of the big change, is you don't feel like you have to be sitting in a big office building like I'm in the one right now to be able to have efficiency or productivity. Technology is pretty amazing today.
And that, I think, is the key change that we've seen over the last 18 months is the acceptability now of having a business that comprises remote workers. And I think if you wind the clock back a couple of years, one of the questions that anyone would ask is, how many people have you got? You know, where are your offices? And your success or your ability to compete was sort of defined by how much marble you have in your, you know, reception area and, you know, the fact that you have hundreds of people. So do you think this change that has been created by COVID is a permanent change? Or do you think it's something that where we will go back to where we were pre-COVID?
Yeah, I mean, my opinion is there will be a hybrid to what we saw before COVID and what we're seeing now. I think you'll always see some people in the office and then some people being able to work from home, because some of the jobs, you just don't need to be in the office that much. And, you know, if you need less square footage and you need less electricity running the building, I mean, it's just some of these massive companies with just, huge, huge, huge buildings, it doesn't really make sense for them to have that amount of square footage unless you're Facebook or Google. And these are really, you know, more shrines than they are office buildings, yes. Right? But I see, you know, going, you know, you talked about going back a few years, man, talk about perception management. We had tax attorneys where we're here in Dallas. I would have to fly to Atlanta to have meetings with our tax attorneys because they only did in-person meetings. And lots of businesses thought that like you mentioned, the only way to be professional was to have the square footage in these teams. And, you know, a lot of our clients still had prior to the pandemic, people in business attire walking around offices, right? It was a very normal thing. But now it's like going forward, it's like, why now? What I think is the most amazing thing is now we can start to manage to outcomes instead of micromanaging tasks and the job description on what people are doing in the day to day. And now really good leaders and great companies and great managers will be able to lead teams based on productivity, based on output, which hopefully will be a more meritocratic environment. So I think that a lot of the changes are here to stay. And I think it's in everyone's best interest. I think it's in employees' best interest. And I think in the companies will reap the rewards from that as well.
And I think also the perception of your business has probably changed as far as your customers are concerned, where previously you were seen as a solution to a problem. Whereas now, potentially, you could position yourselves as an agent of growth.
Yeah, and to be totally candid, people really viewed virtual staffing and virtual teams like ours as more low level, was the assumption. So just more remedial tasks, which is not true at all. I mean, for logistics companies, we're doing all the emergency calls and product walkthroughs and demos, and the same for SaaS and software companies. We're managing Zendesk accounts and CRMs and all the back end. So all the $40,000 to $70,000 a year jobs, for the most part, that's kind of the core of what we do: inside sales, customer support, bookkeeping for finance teams. So it's, you know, people really viewed virtual teams, like this term virtual assistant is one a lot of people are familiar with. And that just sounded low level or remedial. Well, now most companies really understand that teams like ours and companies like ours can provide as good, if not better, quality for a much, much lower price. So our teams tend to outperform US-based staff on a one-to-one basis within most job descriptions. And it's sometimes not even really close. So yeah, it's really changed the perception of our business of not only the types of tasks that our teams can do, but the quality and output that should be expected from companies like ours.
And do you find that the people that work with you as your team, your virtual teams, are they much more motivated than people that work within an office? Do they feel that they really, you know, need to perform, that they want to perform, and they don't suffer from that same issue that when you've been with a company for a long time, you sort of get comfortable? So is that part of one of the benefits, do you think, of working with an outsourced? Because I don't like the term virtual either, because it does have connotations of, you know, you're absolutely right, sort of, you know, repetitive, menial tasks, where we're really looking at sort of non-specific location-based C-level style, you know, qualities.
Yeah. So for us, and if I can summarize, can you summarize your question again?
Yeah, the question,
specifically,
yeah,
and make
I've
sure I don't just ramble.
It's such a long
I'm
question.
Sorry.
You know, I think the tail is actually a bit in the front. You know, the question is, are people much more motivated when they're working on an outsourced, you know, effectively they're working for themselves within or underneath your umbrella? Do they remain more effective, more motivated, more capable than someone who works within an office environment, who over time sort of gets a little too comfortable, perhaps?
Yeah, I think that for the most part, teams do really well, whatever the employment status, whether it's a contractor, W-2 or service provider. I think it's all should be structured the same. And that is with clarity and alignment and clear expectations set on not only what's expected from them in the day-to-day, but what success looks like and what the different paths are and how they're allowed to get there, right? So I think most of the times companies struggle because there's no clarity, there's no alignment. I mentioned systems and processes. A lot of the structural foundational stuff that it takes to provide employees a great environment for them to be successful, I think companies a lot of times are missing a lot of the foundational things. And so one of the things that COVID and the pandemic has provided, it's companies this opportunity to take a step back and kind of really look at their companies and take a much broader approach and kind of, and I mentioned managing to outcomes. Yes. I mean, so many times we think about our employees and what are they doing all day? And I think the much more important question is what are they producing and what is the output and what is the value add of that role? And if we're doing a really good job managing them, then a large part of that management means protecting their day and their time and their task from anything that's not worth their time or not the reason that we hired those team members. So we can provide a lot of structure and a lot of clarity on systems and processes and then the expectations and accountability, then team members really, really thrive. And so I think whether that's in office or I think that if that's virtual, I think that is really kind of the foundation to success. And I think anybody wants to be treated with respect. So if you create this opportunity to have virtual or remote team members, and it's something that works for both parties, then I think you're showing a big, you know, sign of respect and trust there that goes a long way. So I guess that's a very long-winded way say yes.
There's a number of really important points that you've made there. And I think the key phrase is managing outcomes. And I know that this is really important because, and I think really with any business that grows, what tends to happen in my experience is the founders, the owners of the business are very protective of their business and they reach a certain threshold where they kind of run out of talent. In other words, they're very good up to a certain point. But when they bring people in, what they tend to do is they tend to restrict the performance of those people because of their personalities. You know, so you often see, you know, founders or, you know, initial early stage, you know, sort of shareholders or members sort of hovering over the new staff, just wondering what they're going to do, which is the opposite or the antithesis of managing outcomes. You're sort of micromanaging the people. So I think the combination of working remotely and also the structures that you bring in mean that the people that you bring on really can be far more effective at doing what they want to do, which at the same time gives them much more job satisfaction. So it's truly a virtuous circle.
Yeah, totally. And I think it really exposes your management leadership team. Like you talked about the response people have to new employees. I think usually that's a fear-based response that comes from a couple of things. One is, I mean, I was there to totally understand this idea of if the phone's ringing, that every call matters to you, right? Our real estate clients, like every single phone call, it could be a prospective client on two sides of different sides of a transaction. For our, you know, maintenance providing companies, those emergency calls can be, you know, can be an emergency for these homeowners. So it's like every single call for a small business is so important. And every single email that comes through has to be answered. And there's all these things that have to get done. And as the business owner, you talked about them restricting. I mean, it's just this fear of things not being done appropriately or correctly or being done not the right way or somebody answering the phone and not representing you or your company yes. the correct way, because that is your business that you put your blood, sweat, and tears, and you sometimes don't spend weekends and, you know, miss games with kids and wife mad at you or spouse upset with you, whatever, because of how much work you put into the business. So the idea of bringing in new team members is very overwhelming, because what if they screw it up? And I think most of that fear comes from the second part that you mentioned, which is there's no structure, right? And that's one of the things that it's really want to talk about exposing leadership and management is whenever you've got an office, in my opinion, what happens a lot, and we see this over and over again with our clients, and we've done this over 2,200 times, is it's kind of this osmosis training where you just absorb from being in the office. Like, how do I know how to do my job? Well, I sat down next to somebody for a couple months, and after enough time, I kind of learned enough and then could just ask questions periodically when I needed to. And that's kind of how I learned my job. Well, that's very inefficient, and it's not a very there's not a whole lot of alignment and structure and clarity. And so as a result, you get lower output. And then you've got management that has to micromanage to task all day because we don't really know what everybody's doing, right? So if you can put systems and processes and create the clarity up front before you ever hire somebody, if you have that roadmap to success, then once we bring employees and team members in, now we don't have to stress and strangle them the whole time because we've got a clear path. We've got a communication channel set up. We've set clear expectations. And you know, that's one of the things when we go through that process with their clients, that's when they really understand that we're partners with them because we're there to support them long-term in this process, right? Because it's easy to talk about these things, but most entrepreneurs, to your point, they kind of stranglehold their business and their team members and everything. And that comes from lack of structure and previous success without systems and processes. And for most of the time when we see that happening.
And tell me a bit more about your background, how you came, because obviously there's an enormous amount of expertise you have within the whole environment of managing, recruiting, training people. And as I said, sort of jokingly at the beginning, one of the hardest things really to manage or to get performance out of. So how did you, find yourself where you are today? What was your sort of journey, as it were?
Yeah. So if you would have asked me in college when I was a business major, if I would have been, managing well over 1,000 people and helping companies build and lead teams, I would have said, no way. That's not at all. I thought I was going to be in real estate and flipping houses and building a real estate empire. That's what I thought I was going to do. And the truth is, Matthew, I suck at really running a business and managing people.
You can say that here. No one's listening. We're absolutely—
yeah. I mean, like I was really good at marketing and getting my phone to ring and talking on the phone, whether it's the potential sellers or people who wanted to buy houses or, meeting with people at the kitchen table to negotiate, a contract to buy their house whenever I was doing real estate. So I was really good at the front end process of real estate, the relationship management piece. I enjoyed the networking. But when it came to the day-to-day back office stuff, keeping the CRM clean and following up and sending out, contracts and invoices that I said I was going to and talking to title companies and my email going off all day long. The truth is I went to bed every night feeling anxious and guilty because I kind of cherry picked the things that I wanted to do or highest priority each day.
Yeah.
And my to-do list just had a bunch of things, left on the list every single day. And then I woke up each morning feeling anxiety and doing it all over again. So I thought that, I had a little bit of success early on. So I thought it was just going to be easy. Then I started hiring and building and managing teams. And it was terrible. I was awful at it and I dreaded it every single day. And I had a sick feeling in my stomach all the time walking around my office. And I just was not good at managing teams. And I was really lucky.
Can I just stop you there for a moment? Because again, that is something that is really important because I'm sure that anyone that's listening to this who has hired people feels that same sense of, I wouldn't say sickness, but just apprehension when they go into the office because they feel that they need to make sure that their team, that their staff that they've hired are doing something.
Right.
It's like, that guy's not busy. It's my fault. I've got to find something for him to do.
Yeah. And, it's not cheap and you're paying them and then they get paid time off and holidays and all the things that come with it. So it's like, yeah, it's hard to not have that sense of you want people grinding all day long the way that you are, right? And it have the same meaning and importance to them as it does to you. That's a hard thing.
Don't see that. That's the problem, I think, as a company founder, as an entrepreneur, the lens that you look through is not a clear lens. It's more like a kaleidoscope where all of the reality is fragmented and sort of shaken up. And I think that's important because I'm sure that many people have that same feeling that there has to be a better way of getting the work done that I need to be done without having to try and re-engineer these people at a conscious level. And sorry to interrupt, but you were talking about that sick feeling and how did you find that solution?
Well, yeah. So I was just really lucky in that I had some really great business leaders that were even better dads and spouses and leaders in their communities, which to me was super important to have both sides of that, because I was struggling in my business. I couldn't keep my business together, much less have a personal life as well. So there's some people I really respected, big businesses, managing teams. And I wish I'd say had some like sexy story, but really it was just kind of getting beat over the head by some older, more successful people that were showing me that we all have the same number of hours in the day, one. And two, the big turning point for me was I got asked, said like, do I think that my teams, do I think that they want to do a good job when I hired them? And I said, of course that I think people want to do a good job. They said, well, then if they're not producing, if they're not doing well for you, then you haven't provided enough structure, clarity, or set the expectations in a way where they can ultimately be successful. So instead of being the guy who was walking around saying, man, finding good people's hard and managing teams sucks and blah, 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 which is the way I was, I had to kind of turn the finger around and point it right in my face and be like, man, you know, I am the source of the problems. And it started with, you know, I would have problems, there'd be fires, there's things going on. And I would just hire people to go solve solutions but there was no real structure. There was no real, I'm sure I sound like a broken record at this point. I'm talking about systems and systems and systems.
But every day it's like being reactive.
Exactly.
Where it's a bit like where you drive your business based on the emails that you get in that morning.
Yeah, and it's a constant reprioritization of all the fires that are happening all day long, right? Yes. And it's like the squeakiest wheel ends up getting the attention, right? And so that's definitely where I was. And what I did was I first went and documented everything that needed to get done in my business. So I tried to build a scope of work, a training manual for, and then tried to hire some people to do so. And my documentation of all of it was so terrible. It wasn't really usable. It wasn't really something that people could execute on. And so I actually ended up hiring a company to do that for me, to document all of my stuff. And then from there, I could write really good job descriptions.
Sorry to interrupt, but at what point did you move from thinking this is just a pain in the neck, I'm only doing this because the people I respect say I should do it, I don't see the value of this, it's just time, wasted money. Was there a point where you suddenly looked at this and thought, hang on, this is actually going to be useful? I've been banging my head against a wall for my entire life. And now I see what these people are talking about. Was there a moment?
Yeah, I mean, I literally sat across. I went to one of my friend's offices. I drove up to his office. I was expecting this big, you know, giant office. If I pull up, it's a small brick. It was a previous house that had been redone, cute property, the small property that had been turned into some offices. And I walk in, expect, because I know of several employees that he has, and I've talked to a whole bunch of them. So where is everybody? And that's what the aha went off for me. Like, cause we said a time, he's like, no, everybody that does phone work for him was in the Philippines. If you do any back office support, you're in the Philippines. If you did technology work, you were in Russia or Belarus. If you actually had clients to interface with face to face, and now he has none of that anymore. But prior to COVID, he did. Those were the only people in the office. And that for me is myself. It didn't matter that he was in a different industry in a different business. And it was totally, it was still the same concept process. Like when the phone rings, somebody needs to answer. When an email comes through, somebody needs to competently respond, and Zendesk needs to stay updated, right? So that for me was the moment, like, okay, like this is totally doable. Yeah. And it wasn't just him, but several other businesses that I thought had lots of W-2 offices here in North Texas, they didn't. They were just outsourcing pretty much everything. And that's how they were able to grow and scale. And so ultimately, I cared more about the business being successful than my ego being pumped by me being responsible for everything happening in the day to day. And to be honest with you, Matthew, I just went, that was 2011. I just went, started grinding and just started pounding it to try to figure this out. And after a couple years of grinding, I did. I kind of figured it out. And then from 2013 to 2015, around then, I had helped over 100 people do what I was doing just because it was such like this awesome thing that helped my business so much. And I was in that evangelist mode, right? Of just getting everybody on board to this amazing process of outsourcing. And every single time people wanted a done for you option. I mean, it just over and over and over again. So the process that we perfected, the steps that we kind of push everybody through and create the success rate that we have, and ultimately the company that Rocket Station is today, is started from all my failures as a manager, as a leader, as a business owner, trying to figure it out.
Passing that on. You know, are the people that have been through that journey themselves are the best. You know, you've got the most experience and the most ability to say how this applies to reality because, you know, you walked in those shoes.
Yeah, there's not a problem you're facing that we haven't seen. So my family is very well educated, lots of educators and big titles and PhDs and the joke is always like, yeah, are you actually doing anything with information? Is there any application? Or are we just talking all the time? Right.
Is this the typical Thanksgiving conversation?
Yeah, exactly.
It ends up with everyone, you know, sort of silence at the end of the evening as everyone's staring at each other with,
Yeah, exactly. And I'm just not really interested in that. I'm more interested in the application. Right. And so that's what's part of what's really fun about what we get to do is apply all these principles every single day. So most companies and business owners and entrepreneurs, they feel like it's them against the world, that nobody really understands what they're going through or their problems, or, you know, they're really unique because they're working on this unique concept or business or startup, whatever it may be. But the truth is, at the end of the day, business is business. And if you're even if your product is unique or the service a little bit unique, how you're going to implement and run that business is going to come down to a few core principles. And so it doesn't really matter what your pain is that you're feeling or what you're going through. We've probably seen it. And if anybody's got any questions, you know, we don't care whether you hire our teams or not, but we're happy to help answer some questions and put people in a good place if people want to learn more.
And how are you growing your business? Are you eating your own dog food? It's a horrible expression, but you know what I mean? Are you still coming up against challenges, but you're saying, I'm now better experienced, and the things I'm telling my customers, I'm now using those same principles, and I'm now able to grow at a rate that's faster and more secure than I thought would be possible?
Oh, every single day, right? And so there's still times where we have to make decisions on resources, but one of the cool things about what we do is we apply people to solutions where most people are afraid to hire teams or hire people because it's such a big expense, or, you know, there's so much unknown around that. But you're asking how we're growing, and we are kind of going back where everybody right now is using so much automation and there's so much electronic communication. We are kind of going caveman. We are putting human real touches, real people on LinkedIn, connecting, starting conversations, engaging in groups, trying to add value in any community that we can be a part of, you know, business to business communities for the most part. But we're kind of being as caveman as we can, Matthew, in that we're just trying to be, when I say caveman, I mean personal. We're actually making phone calls. Now, dialer systems that exist and all the technology makes things so much easier. It's amazing. But, you know, our sales teams have big teams that do organic outreach and community management and connection. And we're always trying to add value and put on webinars and do as much real application value add as we can, wherever we can, is our primary thing. We do some podcasts and we do some other things, but we don't do a ton of traditional marketing. It's probably the weakest thing that we do as a company, but we've seen amazing growth and strictly between referrals for the most part. And then which is
the
community. Yeah.
But I think what you're saying is that you're using technology in its best way, which is facilitating communication. There is nothing worse, I think, than automated calls or spam emails, or, you know, where there is no effort on the part of the other party to actually try and deliver the message or make contact. So,
right. Or personalization, right? Like, if you're reaching out to me, I want to know that you know something about me, that you're not just going to be figuring it out in that moment and kind of fear, that to me drives me insane. If you can call me and offer me a solution or send me an email with the real solution because you actually know something about me, hey, I'm willing to listen. But if you're just going to spam me, then that drives me insane.
Yes. But it's the difficulty is how it's trying to find those innovative ways of rising above those, above the noise, isn't it? So, and again, from a, what are your most challenging positions? So, you know, has someone, what do you find most difficult to fill in terms of, you know, positions or skill sets?
As far as the roles that we fill?
Yeah, in terms of, is there a particular, is it like impossible to get good salespeople? Is it impossible to get?
No, so we, okay, so we do really, like, okay, this is both within our own company and then also with our clients. It kind of parallels, kind of the same. So we do really well with sales. So inside sales and sales support, because there's just some, even just to get on this podcast, right? The coordination and the scheduling and the management of that, it takes it back and forth. Like there's so much that has to happen in the sales process that yes. Having really competent, amazing inside sales teams are just insanely valuable in my opinion. So we're really good at sales. We're really good at back office support. So customer service, level one IT support for IT departments, product walkthroughs, all of like the customer support, community management, like Zendesk or CRM management and bookkeeping and all the back. We're really good at that. What we're not good at is a couple things, IT and development.
Yep.
So we don't source for those jobs. And then we don't do creative type roles. So editing graphics or videos or those types of things. But we like to think that all the people who go and execute the task in the day-to-day, we fill all of those roles.
Those two are typically outsourced anyway, aren't they? Because they're job-driven. You know,
we're an outsource company and we outsource those.
But you know what I mean? They're not sort of permanent staff. They're not,
right.
You know, those are things that one can be forgiven for. And so your major area of growth, your strongest area where you think you are head and shoulders above the competition, where is the real sweet spot for Rocket Station?
Really two things. It's the inside sales piece we were talking about, and then the service fulfillment. So whatever all the back end support that it takes to run software companies or run logistics companies or dental offices or chiropractors or financial advisors. It's just all the day-to-day task. And I'm not even talking low level. I'm just talking all the back office support. That is really where we thrive. So you mentioned automation, that's, you know, technology's kind of taken over the world, but it's still, people still need the personal touch and they need human beings to create this personalized, customized solution that feels really good at the end of the day, right? And so all of those back office roles are where we do best.
And again, that's important as well, because the people that you bring in bring with them those skill sets. So what you're doing is you're not just delivering a person, but that person brings structure, experience, the ability to deploy far more efficient systems to the business. So that's the thing that's really important, isn't it? Because if you've got the right person, they don't just sit there and say, right, what do I do today? They bring in, so you can re-engineer your sales if you have the right head of sales.
We really look at it like there's two sides to it, right? And they're separate but totally intertwined. And most people are backwards with these steps. So most people hire first and then try to figure out what to do with people next. Yes. We think that you start with structure, clarity, systems, processes, and training, right? That's the roadmap. Now you talked about having the right person. Well, identifying the right person comes down to what task are they going to be fulfilling? So somebody that's going to be in inside sales or customer support on the phone, those are different than bookkeeping and CRM management and working on social media campaigns and pulling reports and data collating. Like those are very different roles. So to have the right person in the right seat, we first need to have a lot of clarity and structure on what they're going to be doing all day. So that's really step one, is creating that roadmap for what tasks are actually going to be completed, putting the system and process, the scope together so they know what they're going to be doing or what their expectations are. Then we can go hire and get the right person. And now we've got so much lower turnover and employees are happier. And now productivity goes up and it's so much easier to manage and culture is amazing, right? So those two sides of it are just so important. That's what we, it doesn't matter whether you have thousands of employees or you're hiring your first one. Yeah. We force everybody to go through the same process because we believe that there is a formula for success and it's kind of matching those two things. So we do a lot of personality profiling and they're on our, they train with us for 6 to 8 weeks before they ever get on interviews. And we really understand who they are, but it wouldn't matter how well we understood our teams and our employees if we didn't have a real clear path of success and an accountability and roadmap for them to go execute. Everybody, it would just be a disaster for everybody. So if you know, getting the right person is all about having the right plan and then attacking those two things together.
Do you turn people away, clients, not employees?
All the time.
I was going to say, because
employees and clients. Yeah. So we're screening over 4,000 applicants a month and hiring less than 2% of those people.
These are the people, the employers, not.
All the time. So we're true. When I very first started, I mean, I'd be lying to you if it was a whole lot harder for me to say no. Early on, because we needed the money for, and I always felt like, people kept telling me, you know, don't take on the bread. But now we truly only want to create win-win and long-term value propositions. So, our part of our entire onboarding process before we ever take anybody from you is just a discovery and alignment phase, because we want to really make sure that the expectations are set and clear and everybody knows exactly what success looks like. So yeah, we turn down a lot of clients because we're not computers. We're not machines that you just turn on and pump out dollar bills. And I know that sounds stupid, but a lot of times that's the way really people important. Look at things.
Because from a client perspective, I want to know that. I want to know that I run the risk of not being accepted into the Rocket Station program, as it were. Because it has to be, you know, I have to provide the right environment. I have to be able to provide the structure and the training. Because otherwise, the person that's working for me is doomed to failure from the outset. But the flip side to that is, how is it getting harder to find good people as the outsourced or the non-location-based employment world expands? Or is there a growing, willing, skilled sales force that's filling that demand gap?
Yeah, so it's really interesting because, again, we're doing it from both sides. We've got most of our teams are in the Philippines. So out of our more than 1,000 employees, most of those are in the Philippines. And we're headquartered here in Dallas as well. And so we're hiring constantly on both sides, W-2s here in Dallas, and then also, well, throughout the U.S., but then also internationally as well. And we keep hearing, you know, every restaurant that you go to right now has a sign saying that they're looking for help and to be patient. And, you know, there's this, you know, through the media, there's this national dialogue about how there's just not enough people for employment. And I think that that's the case for certain sectors and certain businesses and certain job roles. But for the most part, there's still a very healthy, on the US side of things, there's still great, talented people looking for work. And not only that, now without having to be geography restrained, I think it's easy. There's more opportunity. The only thing that makes it harder now is that there's more applicants and you have to put a little bit more work on the front end to screen more people and go through a more robust process because you're scanning more applicants. But I think anytime there's more applicants, it's always going to be better. You have opportunity to hire better people. And one of the really amazing things that's happened for us at the Philippine side is we've been, you know, remote since 2013, since we were over there. And so whenever the pandemic hit, a lot of these big companies and a lot of the companies that existed, they had a hard time shifting and transitioning and making the adjustments. And so recruiting for us is just gotten better because of our reputation internationally is so strong that when other companies were having a hard time, we're kind of cherry picking and being able to recruit from these other big brands and big companies because our company's been around for a while and our brand is pretty strong.
And I think it's a virtuous circle, as I said before, because what you're doing is you are forcing your client, which is the employer, to up their game. So in other words, you're saying, we can help you grow. We can provide you with access to all these resources that have that track record and we can deliver, but you've got to increase you've got to up your game. You've got to have better processes in place. So what you're doing is you're just raising the bar generally, which is the opposite of most people's perception of the virtual world. What you're doing is you're making the employers better employers.
Yeah, it's funny you're saying that, because you're talking about common refrains. Well, a lot of times when people first start with us and they see that one of the first steps is that, again, like I said, we force everybody to go through this process, doesn't matter where you are, is to spend time with us one-on-one to go through everything that's happening, screen share and show us exactly what's happening with everything so that we can document and build roadmaps for everything. And a lot of times people are like, oh, I'm too busy, or I've got too much going on. They don't want to go through that process because they feel like they've got, right. Yeah, it's exactly why it's not going to work if you're not willing to go through that process. So you asked about clients that we won't take on. That is pretty much the differentiator. It's the ones who kind of get and understand that if we go through that process on the front end and we invest that time, then it's just going to reap massive rewards for us long term going forward. And it'll be totally worth the investment. Everything will be great going forward.
And I really think that that's not well understood within your target market. I think from my experience, which is obviously, the sample of one, but I think that people have no real understanding of the value that you bring. Sorry, forgive me. What I mean is that this type of value that you bring is probably unexpected. In other words, people have this perception, but to understand that you bring so much more structure and value and training to me as an employer first, that must be very eye-opening and attractive to someone who, once they realize that this is something that you bring, it must be seen as real value add, because
I think that's why
you're setting them up for success. In other words, all I can say is you're training them for something that has longevity. It's not just a click once. It's you're teaching them how to employ and recruit people professionally and properly, and all that's going to do is improve their business.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I don't know why I'm trying to cut you off, because I couldn't have said anything better than what you just said.
They have absolutely right to do so.
No, that's exactly right. This is only to make them better, right? And you talk about being a long-term relationship. That's what we're interested in, is a long-term success, right? And so if we take a few minutes on the front end to just get everything correct the first time the right way, I think that's why our retention numbers are what they are. Most people come to us because they have an initial pain point or initial problem. There's something that's poking them. There's a reason at the beginning, right? Their emails are overwhelming them, too many phone calls, customers are complaining. There's something there. They want to grow or do a marketing campaign. Their sales guys can't. There's some kind of reason there. That's not why that they really view us as a partner. And it's not why companies and clients stick around forever. It's yes, we do those things. We solve those pain points, but it's the emotional capital you get back as a result of us restructuring your business and restructure. Like, you're still driving the bus. You're still making all the decisions. It's still your business. We're just taking any opportunity that exists to make your business more efficient, run a little bit smoother, be a little bit easier on you on the day to day, if at all possible, heaven forbid, we make things a little bit easier. So then once we do, then now we've got a long-term path for success, right? And so that's what it's really all about, is exactly what you just said. And it's pretty awesome that you said it much better than I ever could.
I'm just checking to see if we actually recorded it. Thank God we did. Yeah. But no, I think that's the real value, and that's the real exciting thing. It's just that holistic approach. It's not the stack them high and sell them cheap. It's the opposite. It's you're providing growth, you're providing structure, education, marketability to businesses that are tired and world weary, possibly within in recruitment. But so it's absolutely fascinating. But I'm going to switch gears now, and I'm going to ask you my 10 Hooked on Startups quick fire questions. Robin, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Question number one. What is your favorite word?
My favorite word that I...
They get easier, by the way.
Yeah, I say the F word too much because when
you
I'm...
You can
on the,
say it. No one's listening, honestly.
Yeah, the golf course or wherever my friends hanging out, like I tend to use that word too much. But I think my favorite word is actually progress is probably my favorite word.
Number two, what is your least favorite word?
My least favorite word is...
Why are you looking down? Did you write these down somewhere?
No, I need to be careful. Like, I didn't write these down, so I need to make sure that the first thing that comes to my head doesn't get me in trouble.
No, it's fine. We have the power of edit, which I
may... my least favorite word is I can't.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, I completely understand that. Number three, what are you most excited about right now?
Most excited about. So with our teams in the Philippines, we have community engagement projects that are totally voluntary. The teams come up with the ideas. It's called Rocket Station Cares, whether it's supporting schools and communities that are sending kids back to schools or different healthcare initiatives. The teams get to pick on what we're going to do each quarter. And then the teams go support that. It's backed by Rocket Station, obviously. And so that grows as the company grows. We just dedicate a percentage of our resources back into Rocket Station Cares. And so that is what I'm most excited about going forward is the opportunities within Rocket Station Cares.
That's wonderful. And question number four, what turns you off right now?
I don't listen to the news at all, either side. So yes. Anytime I turn the news on, it totally turns me off about and makes me sad and depressed and question pretty much everything. So my mom called me a couple of days ago. This is a true story.
Yeah.
Because I guess the UN or whoever released some climate change report. And
yes.
I have two very, very smart brothers who called my mom freaking out about the information in there. And she called me and I hadn't even heard. I had no idea what's going on. So that's how I prefer when it comes to news and current events is I have no idea what's happening. So the news turns me off.
And again, why you can spend your life trying to sort one truth from another, but a whole different subject. Question number five, what sound or noise do you love?
Sound or noise do I love? So the sales team, they have this thing where they yell boom every time there's a new sales that comes through on the Zoom chat is like this boom. And now it's kind of permeated across the company where it's not just sales where people yell boom anytime there's a win. So that's kind of my favorite word right now.
Brilliant. And number six, what sound or noise do you hate?
Sound or noise do I hate? So I recently, these are terrible answers, I know, but I live in a condo building downtown and recently at night, there's been people doing like street racing or something going on down there. So it's like 2 a.m. on a weeknight and they're down there. So I can't quite figure out what's going on there, which is not interesting to anybody listening
at all.
So
it's, I can see that it's gnawing away inside you.
Yeah, I will accidentally
spill
a better
bucket of nails on that street at 2 a.m. and see how you do that.
That's a good idea. I should do that.
Question number seven, what's your favorite curse word? So we're actually back to the beginning here. So I think I have a rough idea what it is.
Yeah, so I like that one. I say let's freaking go a lot. So LFG, like Tom Brady. So it'd have to be that one. My mom says I need to be a little more creative, but it's my favorite.
It is a noun, an adjective, a verb. It is possibly the greatest invention that the English language has ever produced.
So usable. It's so many different. I can be excited and use it.
It is
upset
out.
And use it. Yeah, exactly. It's just, it seems to fit.
Don't use it. I mean, that's what I just feel. Those people really are missing out. So we have to have a moment's silence for them, I think. Question number eight. What profession other than your own would you like to attempt?
Profession other than my own? I think it would be cool to be an attorney and defend underserved populations. So find cases where you think people have been wrongfully charged or accused of crimes for whatever reason. So to be able to serve people, be a public defender or something like that, I think would be super cool.
Fascinating. And question 9, what profession would you not like to attempt?
Oh my gosh, almost all of them. Like, my dad's a dentist.
Say, be careful here, because if you're in the recruitment business, you know, you've got to be careful how you answer that, because otherwise you might alienate an entire sector.
Yeah, I mean, but for me personally, yeah, I mean, my dad's a dentist. That doesn't look like a lot of fun. We had a great childhood, great upbringing, but just having your hands in somebody else's mouth all the time.
And I think you're right, because they only come and see you when they're in pain. So,
yeah, and everyone hates the dentist. So it's like, my dad is this amazing guy, super happy, but like, everybody hates going to see the dentist. So I can't imagine that being fun.
Yeah, it's either that or like the proctologist, I think, are the two sort of, you know,
yeah, exactly.
Top two. Yeah. And my final question, if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I'm proud of you.
Fantastic, Robert. It's been such a pleasure. It really has. Fantastic. I could talk to you for hours and hours, and you rightfully would hang up, you know, instantly. But how do people find out more about you and Rocket Station? And how do they engage? Because that's exactly what they should do right now, I think.
Thank you so much. Yeah, thank you so much for having me on today. This was a lot of fun. I can't always say an hour goes by really fast, yes, but it did. I don't know about to anybody who's listening, but it was for me. It was great. It was a lot of fun. So our website is rocketstation.com. So there's some great information there. And then there's a yellow button that says schedule time now. And that goes to our development team, and would love to spend 30, 45 minutes just answering questions for anybody that's interested or has questions or wants to learn more. So go to the website, rocketstation.com, and you can find us there.
That's wonderful. It's been an absolute pleasure. I can't wait to, you know, dig deeper. And I'm sure that, you know, you'll find a new client knocking on your door very soon that may seem slightly familiar. So look forward to that. Thank you once again.
Thank you.